Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way of improving itself in the lives of many addicts is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thanks, Josh. All right. I would like to introduce our first speaker. It's Chandler N. from the Broken Yet Accepted group of Narcotics Anonymous.
So my name's Chandler and I'm an addict.
Chandler.
If it's all right with everybody else, I want to just start off by surrendering. Serenity prayer. I'm really nervous, but God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, this is a pretty big topic, huh? Men in recovery, huh?
Okay.
So, I guess I'm going to start off with saying, like, my first and most difficult problem to deal with, which I believe is a lot of men's battle, was the escape into women. For me, women were my devil for some time. You know what I mean? Because, you know, my mom died at a very young age, and then my aunt took hold, and she fed some death into my life. You know what I mean? And for some reason, like, I followed that identity that she gave me for a long time to where I was never nothing, never going to amount to nothing, you know? So I needed to escape young and early. And the easiest way to do that for me was into another woman. So for a long time, you know, being young and dumb, I found that escape, you know, living in the inner city. I didn't go to school, and when I did go to school, it was for all the wrong reasons. I picked the classes that had the most women, performing arts and, you know, drama and choir and, you know, those types of things. And that was my drug. To begin with, you know what I mean? That was the easiest escape for me. Never found love, you know what I mean? And I wasn't looking for love, you know? Anytime somebody got close, I pushed them away. I pushed them out of my life because that was easy for me. You know, I wanted to lose people on my terms, not on theirs. So going throughout my life, you know what I mean? Probably about 11, I started drinking pretty hard. Those from the city might know, I mean, people in the country might know, Snake Piss, King Cobra, or, you know what I mean? Like, it was $1.05, you know what I mean? And it was easy to get because I could just give a couple fiends a $20 bill and they'd bring back whatever. So I drank a lot, you know, and that was a good escape for me as well. But it also brought my other addiction, you know, women. I was introduced to pot pretty young. My dad and my sister was all sitting around smoking, and I was playing Super Nintendo, you know, and I got handed it, you know what I mean? Like, just was sitting close enough to the rotation. And that happened, and I think that was my first true escape, because I couldn't think straight. There was no thought process left. You know, I couldn't even dwell on the past anymore because it wasn't there. And I followed that for a long time, you know, along with my other things, but still was escaping love. You know what I mean? And, you know, I kept fighting, you know, for a long time. You know, I tried some other things along the way, you know, but never really wasn't nothing really an escape for me, like those two things, that pot and them women. It wasn't until later in life, you know, once I felt like I had some kind of purpose, you know, that I realized that, like, I was never going to love anybody because I didn't love myself. You know what I mean? And I kept pushing people away, and I was in college, and one late night got introduced to something that would help me finish a paper. That one thing took over my life and took everything else away, whether it be women, any other drug, any other addiction that I had at the time. I was fully engulfed in it, you know, because I didn't need nothing else. That's all I needed. That's all I thought I needed. You know what I mean? And in the process, it took my kids. I watched it take my kids, and somehow I didn't care. You know, I did, but I didn't, because I kept doing the same thing. You know what I mean? I ended up snatching up my wife at one point, and that was something I said I'd never do, because before my mom passed away, I watched my dad do that to my mom. You know what I mean? And that drove me further into my use instead of pulling me away. Like, why that does that? I'll never figure that out. Like, the stuff that hurts us the most drives us further into it, and that still don't make sense to me. You know what I mean? I just kept digging and digging. I used for a while, and then I don't know, 2017, I got pulled over on my way back from a run, you know, and when I got pulled over, I had some stuff on me, but they ripped my motorcycle apart, they ripped my book bag apart, they didn't find it, you know what I mean? In my mind, that was God trying to tell me something. And I always say that was my conception into recovery, because that's the first time in my life that I felt like I had to change my life. You know what I mean? I might not have had no clean time after that right away, but that's when my recovery started. You know what I mean? That's when my mind started to change. That's when my focus started to turn towards God a little bit. So that was end of 2017. I stopped hanging around with some of the people, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, honestly, I was in psychosis by that point. I mean, I was already pulled over, thought they was in my phone, thought, you know, everything, you know how it goes. So I just put everybody to the side, my wife, everybody. And, you know, I didn't even want women no more. Like, I'm good, you know? And July 16th, 2018, I put myself in my first rehab. And that was the first moment of clarity I had, but not enough clarity, because when I got home, my life was still chaos. You know, my wife was still using, everybody was still at my house using, and I didn't know what to do. The only thing I knew to do was tell my wife, like, look, you gotta go to rehab or I'm leaving. And so she went to rehab. A couple days later, we got $2,300 in shutoff notices. That's what happens when you're addicts. You don't pay nothing, you know? And so I didn't know how to come up with $2,300 in less than a month. I mean, if if you ain't got no job and you ain't got no vocational skills and know how to come up with that without doing dirt, let me know. We'll talk after the meeting. But so I know I didn't want to use. I was on a bracelet. I didn't want to use. So I threw on some gloves and did the only thing I knew how to do to make $2,300. I made that money and somehow, some way, didn't use during that time. You know, and quit. Quit selling before she got home. House was good. The only thing that didn't improve there was my recovery. Because, you know, you can't be clean and live a dirty life. You know what I mean? And that's what I was doing. I was still sneaking around with women. I just wasn't using drugs. I was still doing stupid stuff. I just wasn't doing drugs. You know, I didn't change the people, places, and things. I wasn't going to meetings. I wasn't talking to God. You know, that's the main part of my recovery today. And I wasn't doing that then. You know, so after 9 months, I'm hanging out with somebody. They were 10 and 2 in it. And needless to say, I was there too. And the way it was told to me, you know, this thing is progressive. I didn't know it then, but it was. I know for sure it definitely is progressive, because I was right back at, you know, ball to a quarter ounce a day habit and not caring about anything. Trying to hide it from my wife, former addict, now in recovery, like dove into recovery, not like, unlike me, she found people and dove into it, you know. I was just going like this, trying to test the waters, and never got wet. And was still scared. I was a scared little 9-year-old boy living in a man's body. Because I'd never dealt with anything. You know, I never dealt with my mom dying at 9. You know, so now I'm 35 years old, getting high, doing everything else as a scared child. You know, and because all of it was still there. Nothing got better because nothing got better. You know, and I remember May 21st, 2019, I'm at a friend's house and I'm like, I'm done tomorrow. How many of us have said that? I'm done tomorrow. I want my life back. Little did I know, I didn't want that life back. I didn't want the women and the chaos that my life was before everything else. Like I remember praying and crying, and I wanted to turn myself in, and I was too scared. And something out there heard my prayers. You know what I mean? I know who that something is today for my recovery. You know what I mean? But the next day, my probation officers, the dogs, the cops, was all at my door. And I put it on everything I love. I've never been relieved to see a badge in my life until then. I was ready. I was ready to surrender to a new way of life. You know what I mean? And I started to surrender. And you know, I'm in jail, so, you know, most people in jail, they find something to pray to. And I pick up one of my first recovery books, you know. And still to this day, I say it was one of the greatest love stories I ever read. You know what I mean? And it was all about me, you know. And it changed something inside my mind, you know, that I wanted to change, but didn't know how, you know. And then my heart got completely shattered when my daughter came to see me behind a plate glass window at 5 years old and wanted to give her dad a hug. And couldn't. And I saw her heart shatter. And mine did as well. And I put that shovel down. And I stopped digging. And I started climbing to the top. You know, I started talking to that man in that, from that book, about a love that I didn't understand. But I understood that love was something that I couldn't grasp because I had held on to so much pain, you know. And through a roundabout way, I started working these steps without even knowing about NA yet. You know what I mean? And then when I, by the grace of God, I was let out of jail into a treatment court program with the accountability that was needed to face life on life's terms with standards and ethics and grounds that I had to walk by because I didn't know how to live without some kind of authority. And we're sitting in, I never forget, we're sitting in the IOP, and if anybody's ever been to my area up in Podunk, I call it Reynoldtucky, but it's Reynoldsville. There was only one NA meeting, and there was a couple people there, and they were talking about there's no NA around here, and I said, yes, there is. And like, by that point, I had went to a couple faith-based, and I'm like, this is stupid. Nobody relates to me. They look at me like I'm crazy. You know, I went to AA, sorry, different fellowship, and they looked at me like I was crazy. And so I walked into a room in Dubois, Pennsylvania, called We Needed This Meeting. Boy, did I needed this meeting. Because I walked in and I got a hug from a man that's here today. And that's the first piece of love I felt from a human being, even though my wife had been trying to give that to me for a long time. You know what I mean? But I didn't feel it then, you know, because I had a resentment towards my mom that I didn't know I had. Like, it wasn't even her fault. You know, that was false expectations of my own, you know, thinking that she should live forever. You know, so I had a resentment towards women, and I didn't know, you know, but I found love in NA. And I'll tell you what, that is the spiritual principle, the number one spiritual principle that this fellowship hangs on, is unconditional love, period. You know what I mean? Every other spiritual hangs on that, and it talks about it in that first recovery book, you know, patience, kindness, long suffering, all of that was found, and you know, my higher power was trying to show me that, but I wasn't listening, you know, until I had a human being there with me helping me learn some things and learn about love and learn about letting some stuff go so I can love. You know, and finally was able to love. You know, before all of that, I wouldn't even say the word love. Now I love every one of y'all. You know what I mean? Especially to a man, I would never say that before. Like, it just wasn't me. And now it completely changed. You know? And then I started another chapter in my life after a couple years in recovery. You know, and it was down in Johnstown. I went to a Sunday night meeting, you know what I mean? And they were reading a book that I ain't never picked up yet, you know? And the day I walked in, they was on the chapter of love. And something stuck out that night, and I'm gonna read it. It's NA approved literature. You know, it says love is a form of intelligence. It is the intuition that brings us into the right words when there are no words. That tells us when to step forward and when to back away. We feel love when we speak the truth. When we are in a higher power's will, we naturally carry a message, and the message we need finds us. When we clear away the defects that block the passage, we can be a clear channel for the love that surrounds us. We tap into a love that is greater than ourselves and find that we are able to do the things we never thought possible. Brilliance comes through us. And that's what love is. You know, love was something that was foreign to me since my mom had died. You know, my mom died when I was young, and that was the only person that ever showed me unconditional love until I met my wife. You know, and I would push her away and push her away, and she would talk to her higher power, and he would tell her that I was going to be worth it one day, and I would tell her that he was lying, you know, because he loved me long before I even loved him. Amen. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you what, boy, was she right. You know, he was right. You know what I mean? Like, I do a thing today where I give myself in recovery. You know what I mean? Like, I try to share. I try to teach. You know what I mean? I try to lead the way. You know what I mean? I ain't got a lot of time. You know what I mean? But God has given me the spiritual steps to keep moving forward. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't want to start rambling because then it's not God. But I thank you for giving me time. And I thank you for having me.
Thanks, Chandler. Love you, dog. All right. Thank you, Chandler. All right. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Graham G. from Simply Recovering from the North Hills of Pittsburgh.
All right. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Graham. Can you put this around your neck, please?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Graham. I'm an addict.
Hey, Graham.
What's happening? Men's rap. Tough subject. So, for me, man, I don't know about anybody else, but I have this image of what society thinks a man is, right? Like tough, strong, macho, strong handshake, eye contact, deep voice. And like, there's this standard that I just think we have to live up to. And it's really just not me. You know what I mean? It's not that I don't have some of those qualities, but it's like, I'm not going to meet this standard. And it just seems unattainable. Like, I'm not going to be like the strongest kid on the football team. You know what I mean? I don't even have to play football, but I think, you know, I have to compare somehow. And like, when I was growing up, my parents got divorced when I was like 10, and I lived with my mom, not my dad. I'd see my dad a little bit, not that much, but like, my male role model was basically out of my life, and I hadn't even really hit like adolescence, puberty yet. You know what I mean? So I don't know, where did I get my male role models from? TV, Al Bundy, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I was misguided, and I just kind of like floundered around a little bit, trying to participate in all the sports I could, trying to date all the women I could, trying to like live up to this image that I thought I needed to live up to. And then I found drugs. I thought I had found something there, right? I thought I had something different. That it wasn't that the drugs made me better at anything, but they made me not really care what you thought about me as much. You know, they didn't make me compare myself to everybody else because I was just like fitting in. And that's what I thought it did for me. It was just made me fit in. Now, the crowd of people I was fitting in with were doing the same thing. So I wasn't exactly staying out of trouble, but I felt like I fit in, and I felt like that's, you know, this, like, I'm home. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I found out that the drugs aren't the solution to anything, right? I got arrested a lot. Like, I wasn't breaking into stuff. I wasn't, you know, strong arm robbing anybody. I wasn't violent, but I was just like sloppy and lazy. And I got pulled over a lot, and, you know, houses got searched and cars got searched, and, you know, I had detectives following me around, and I was just sloppy, and I got arrested a lot. And the problem was, once I got into that system, I couldn't get back out on my own. Like, you gotta do, there's a lot to do with probation. I remember my first time here, I was on probation, I had to get special permission to leave the county. Yeah. It seems like a long time ago now, but yeah, that's what my life was. It was like I had to ask special permission to do something that might better me and, you know, help me in my life, just because that was my track record. So I eventually did get clean after 10 trips to jail, about 10 years of paper, probation, parole, altogether. I was only getting high for like 10 years, right? Like, I was on paper almost the whole time. Like, it almost lines up. So, like, I get high, I get in jail, I get in trouble, you know. It just seems like I just didn't do it very well for very long. I just didn't get away with much, you know. And if I wasn't in trouble with the cops, I was definitely in trouble with, like, my family. When I got clean, I still didn't have these, like, male role models to really look up to, but I started coming to meetings. My first experience with Narcotics Anonymous, I got out of jail, and I called up a friend that I knew that, you know, I ran with on the streets, and I knew he had gotten his life together a little bit. He was working steps. He was going to meetings. He had a sponsor. So I wanted to see what he was doing, because I figured if I do what he's doing, maybe probation will back off a little bit. And I didn't know it at the time, but he was on his way kind of out, and I was on my way in. But he did put me in touch with somebody that was his sponsor at the time, who I never met. But I, you know, called this guy. We didn't have text messages yet, or if we did, it was 10 cents a send or whatever. You know, it was expensive. But I got a hold of this guy, and he and his sponsor took me to a meeting. And now my friend, who's no longer with us, by the way, but my friend didn't tell me his sponsor was gay. Right now, I wouldn't care. Back then, I cared a little bit, but he didn't tell me. And so these two gay guys are taking me to a meeting, and I'm like, I was just in culture shock. I didn't hang out with gay people. I was a little homophobic back then. I was like, I didn't know what they were gonna do with me. They were older than me. You know, they weren't my type anyway. But they were so cool, man. They were so cool. And so I had some male role models. Like, these guys had a lot of time clean. And they knew the program. They knew the steps. They knew what to do. They knew that I was, you know, fragile, and I had an ego. And they knew how to, like, let me be myself and, like, work through it. And they took me to a meeting. I didn't stay clean after that meeting, but that was my choice. Another trip to rehab, another trip to jail, came back out. And I found a meeting, and these guys were still there. That kind of started the beginning, you know. They talked me into coming here for the Unity Retreat, the Journey Continues 12, 2008. I was like, yeah, I'm in, cool, I'll go. I didn't tell them I was still using. I was still drinking at the time. I was going to meetings and I was drinking. Until, well, what happens when I use? I get arrested. So I got arrested one night, August 16th, 2008. So my clean date's August 17th, 2008. And I came up here for the first time, first big event, you know, I love this event. First time I came here, I had 5 days clean. I remember writing my, you know, clean time on the little list when you register, it's like 0, 0, 5. I had to, you know, count days. I had a good time here, you know. I started following like the program. I started like getting into this and like getting involved and doing what we're taught to do around here and discovering a little bit more about myself along the way. The journey continues. I gave my first lead the next year here. Somebody saw me go into meetings a lot, hung out, you know, before and after meetings. I went to his house to watch the Steelers every week. We did fantasy football. And then he called me up one day and was like, hey man, can you speak for me at the Unity Retreat 13? I'm like, bro, I don't even have a year yet. He's like, I got faith in you. And I gave my first lead here with like a year and 5 days clean, something like that. So this place here has a lot of, I mean, it has a lot of meaning to me. It seems like they get me every other year. I was talking to Alex about it. It used to be odd number years, now it's even number years, that's okay. COVID changed everything. But I'm still learning, man. I'm still definitely a work in progress. We just got done celebrating 16 years clean in this program. My last day to pick up key tags was yesterday, so like it's still pretty fresh. And thank you. You know, thank you for being here, keeping doors open, keeping lights on, keeping the coffee hot. Because I still need this as much as I did then. Absolutely still need it. I see what happens when we don't keep doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you come in here for the first 30 days, you're going to get some tools. You're going to fill that toolbox with new stuff that I can speak for myself. I learned all this stuff about how to stay clean in the first 30 days I was here. I didn't learn much new since then, but I've had to apply it and reapply it and apply it in different ways. And things come up, and I go through life situations, life on life's terms shows up. It's nice to have that toolbox, but like, I still gotta use it. I still gotta be here. So I've seen enough people go back out, and just, they don't make it back. Of that group of people I was here with in 2008, one of them died of natural cause. Two of them died of natural causes. A couple of them died of non-natural causes. A couple died of overdoses. And like, that was the group I was with, but they were clean at the time. And it's like, so much has changed over the years. Just this morning I found out news that one of us had overdosed recently. I was at an event. One of us lost a sponsee a couple years ago. And the girl's family didn't have enough money to pay for funeral expenses. So the sponsor, who's my friend, started a nonprofit agency that helps raise money for people's families that their loved one dies of an overdose and they don't have money to pay for the funeral expenses. And they do an annual motorcycle run and a couple other things that raise money. So I was there this morning and, you know, I talked to one of us and he told me someone else had just overdosed. And it still comes as a shock. I mean, the longer you stick around, the more of these funerals and things you hear about, but still comes as a shock, man. That guy was, he was here when I got here. You know, he's had ups and downs, man. We've all had ups and downs, but sad to see him go. So I got to do what I got to do to stick around here, man. Like, everybody at this event was asking me why I was leaving, why you're not riding with us, why you're not hanging out. Like, listen, I made a commitment to Narcotics Anonymous, and I continue to make and follow that commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. If someone asks me to be somewhere, and I can do it, and I commit to it, that's where I'm going to be. This other event's nice. You know, it's nice in the community. It's a fundraising event. It's for a good cause. I did what I could to show up, participate a little bit there, but I had to be here. You know, this is more important. This is where I save my ass.
That's right.
This is where I save my ass so nobody has to pay for my funeral. So, I'm always so grateful to be out here. Always so grateful. It was a beautiful day for a ride. So I got to have my own little ride, about 90 minutes, out Route 30. Just gorgeous coming out here. Get to see some friends. I'm just thankful, man. I didn't have any kind of positive male role models in my life. Today I have so many men that I can call friends. I have a sponsor. I ran into my grand sponsor on the way out here. I'm just riding my motorcycle. I hear someone honking their horn. He's on his motorcycle at the intersection. So then we start like riding beside each other 10 miles an hour blocking traffic, just discussing what's going on, you know. And I'm like, I'm going to Hooversville. And he's like, I'm going to Irwin. Like, yeah, be safe. But like, I don't know, man. It was just a totally kind of different interaction I have with other men in my life today. It's not about who got it. It's not about how much you got. It's just not about that. It's not a competition. Life isn't a competition. As a man, I always forget that, like, life's not a competition. I've been up here many a time hurting over a girl. At least three of the times I've been here, I was hurting over a girl. And it was all different girls, of course. But the more, like, life goes on, the more I realize, like, I'm okay without it. When I came in here, these guys that were, like, teaching me the ropes told me to stay out of a relationship for a year. And I disagreed with them, but I did it. And it turns out they were just preparing me for the day whenever I have a conscience and I don't really want to be with some scandalous woman. And there's been plenty of times where, like, I'm better off on my own. I didn't know it at the time. I thought I needed a woman on my side. Otherwise, like, who am I as a man, right? So now I'm in my mid-40s and I haven't been married. And, like, that's okay. Like, I'm not trapped. I'm not paying alimony. I'm not paying child support to somebody that's, like, not there for me, right? It's okay to be alone. I learned that here, too. I still need to be reminded sometimes. But I'm okay, you know? These men in my life, man. Whenever I picked a sponsor, I wanted a sponsor for the things he had. Kind of. I wanted to make sure he had like a stable job, had his own place, had a decent woman, had a car, driver's license, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I wanted to find people that were like some kind of ideal that I wanted to measure up to and like do what they did so I can have that too. It basically worked, you know, it basically did work. But also like humility, spirituality, clean time, peace. I got some of that too. Wasn't really what I was looking for, but I did what he did what they did. I got what they got, you know? And the biggest thing for me, man, is I got to continue to show up. And I said this once, but the journey continues, man. I have to continue to show up and do it because all that peace, serenity, the motorcycle, the women, all of it fits in a pipe, man.
That's right.
It all fits in a fit. Handcuffs take me away from all of it. I know where I go. I continue to show up and do the things I got to do. Earlier this year, I mean, I got some clean time, right? I mean, I'm not tooting my horn, but like substantially, that's a lot of clean time. That's really hard for an addict like me that couldn't stay clean for a week outside of jail. Proved that to myself many times, but it's a lot of clean time. And earlier this year, I could feel myself kind of straying from the middle, you know, like not as in tune with my recovery as I usually am. I still go to meetings, but that's about it. And I could just feel myself like waking up in the morning, not as grateful and like not being as gung-ho to like take on the world every day. And I didn't really have a solution other than buckle down, go to more meetings, get back in the middle. So I put myself on this like mandatory 90 and 90, and I started going to a meeting every single day with 15 plus years clean. And at first it seemed kind of like a chore, and then it seemed kind of fun, and by the end of it I didn't want to stop. And I also found out that like no sponsee of mine is ever going to have an excuse to not go to a meeting every day for 90 days because I was busy, but I got it done. I actually ended up going to about 110 meetings in 110 days. Well, 113 meetings in 110 days. And I got around, you know, I wasn't just staying in the same three blocks. and it helped me. It helped me a lot, man. It recentered me on everything. Got me more active in other people's lives. It connected me with old friends again. It got me like waking up at a decent hour in the morning. Put me back on a just regular routine and schedule. I don't feel like an outsider when I go to some of those outside meetings, like I did. So I mean, that's just one thing lately that's really helped a lot. You know, and I continue to like work this program to the best of my ability. I continue to try to do what I can to help others. My sponsee and I have a regular Saturday night coffee date at 7:15 at Starbucks where we go and just BS, and then we go to a meeting. Every once in a while other people show up, you know. We got a bunch of guys that do a bunch of stuff together between motorcycle runs, golf outings, fantasy football. A lot of people that just like share similar interests with me that get together and do stuff. And I can kind of set my calendar around it, you know. This is one of those events where I'm here pretty much every other year, right? But the years I'm not here, I got like four other events going on this weekend. So it's like I got a pretty busy wee, you know, especially in the summer. If anybody here is new, what I suggest is take the suggestions, not just mine, take them all. There's not one that someone's going to give you that's going to get you high, right? You might not like all of them, but you're going to find ones that you do. You're going to find ones that work. You're going to stay clean through it, and you're going to make some friends, you know, get to know some people in here. I got to know people in all these different areas when I got clean, and now like I can go to any area and still know somebody. You know what I mean? I can show up at a meeting in Johnstown. I've been to one meeting in Johnstown in my life, but I can show up and know somebody. I mean, I can go I can go to Beaver County, I'll know somebody. I can go to Washington County, I'll know somebody. I got clean in Katanning. There was like three meetings a week in Katanning, maybe five. I go to Katanning, I know somebody, you know what I mean? But get to know some guys in here, you know. I got to know some women in here too, and there are good women, and I'm not going to say like, you know, men with the men, women with the women, because there's some really good women that have my interests in here too. But that can cause a lot of problems, right? That can cause some problems. So I don't want to like advocate talking to all the women, but they can cause problems for sure. But hey, men can cause problems too. Men can cause problems too. I've been the guilty party in a lot of spats with friends over stupid shit. Don't get money involved. But like the men in here, man, they're gonna have your back. They're gonna show you how to stay clean. I've got to come up here and just, I don't know. I've got to come up here and kick it with some real good dudes in this program over the years, and I just love it every time I come up here. I don't have a lot more to say. I don't really know how to be a man or how to rap like a man, right? But I do the best I can do every day, and it seems to be working for me. So if you can just try to like do what works for you, you can find out from all these other people doing it, you know, find a predecessor, ask for some help, and most of all, keep coming back. That's all I got.
Howdy, my name is Joe Manatic.
Joe.
All right, I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Could we have the reading just for today?